and you say, oh my God, am I here all alone? But something is happening and you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones? You hand in your ticket and you go watch the geek who immediately walks up to you when he hears you speak and says, how does it feel to be such a freak? And you say, impossible, as he hands you a bone. And something is happening here, but you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones? You have many contacts among the lumberjacks to get you facts when someone attacks your imagination. But nobody has any respect anyway. They already expect you to all give a check to tax-deductible charity organizations. Been with the professors and they've all liked your looks. With great lawyers you have discussed lepers and crooks. You've been through all of F. Scott Fitzgerald's books. You're very well read, it's well known. But something is happening here and you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones? Well, the sword swallower, he comes up to you and then he kneels. He crosses himself and then he clicks his high heels. And without further notice, he asks you how it feels. And he says, here is your throat back, thanks for the loan. And you know something is happening, but you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones? Now you see this one-eyed midget shouting the word now. And you say, for what reason? And he says, how?
Hello, fellow KBOO listeners. My name is Linux, and it's that time of the year again. It's off to school for another year, and boy, are there a lot of things that you might encounter during your school year that you may or may not probably use at least once. And I'm here to do a tier list on those everyday appliances you find at school. In case you don't know what a tier list is, it's a simple chart with rankings from S to F, with S being the best and F being the worst. Just know, this list is my opinion, so don't freak out if you like the rankings. First up on the list is pencils. I'll give it an honest A tier, because you'll be using it a lot for writing test answers and drawing dumb doodles on the paper that you were given. Speaking of paper, it's going in C tier. It relies mostly on the mighty pencil to do anything great during school hours, but it's mostly a blank canvas for your mind to fill, so that's why it isn't lower on the list. Next up is pencil sharpeners. It gets an S tier, no doubt, because of its sheer usefulness. Sharpening pencils. I swear, I would never survive school without it. Next on the list is chalk. It gets a low B tier because it's more of a horse pencil, but it breaks very satisfyingly and tastes good. Never mind. And next on the list is the ruler. F tier. Who actually used these things in school? It's just a stick used to measure things, and it's pretty useless compared to anything else you'd use. Now on to the dunce cap. Yes, I'm counting that because you probably worn it once. And it also gets F tier, because it makes you look stupid with it on. Following up with school computers, S tier. Need I say more? It's a gosh darn computer. Now we reach markers. they get a B tier. I mean, they do have a lot of beautiful color choices, but they just aren't as iconic as crayons, which get A tier. Crayons are great for the elementary years, but get pretty dated by the time you reach 4th grade. Following up with notebooks, S tier. It has loads of pages for all your homework and drawing needs, plus you can use it as a journal. Can't forget your backpack, of course, so backpacks get a high B tier.
Actually, it gets S tier because it's required to carry all of your work essentials.
Shut it, you human pimple! Sorry. Albeit backpacks are essential because they carry everything you bring. They do weigh a load, which means if you carry a lot, it could make walking to school an even bigger pain because of the extra weight. But enough rambling, let's continue. Now we reach the paint, which gets D tier. Not only is it used in one specific class, it doesn't even make up for it in its use. It's just a fancy crayon that uses a brush instead of a pencil. And now, a school supply required for all arts and crafts sessions, scissors. It gets a low S tier because unless you need to cut something, it doesn't really do anything until the need to cut is met. But it does a great job when used, that's for sure. Now, on to the last one. The guaranteed S tier. The goat of math class. Calculators. Don't lie, none of us would even survive algebra without our trusty calculator on hand. Too bad it's only used in math class. And that officially wraps up my school supplies tier list. Now, it's time for a pop quiz. Just kidding, this isn't English class. But hope you enjoyed my wonderful segment. Happy school year!
Hey, we were going to do a piece on tips for procrastinating, but we never got to writing anything. Have a good school season. Here's some music we picked out for you.
So, yeah, if you're wondering how to procrastinate, there's a great tip on procrastination. Just never work on it.
Okay, first song up is Green is the Color by Pink Floyd.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Yo, this is M1 from Dead Press.
Hey, what's up? This is Boots from The Coup.
Nah, I mean, telling you to stay tuned to Hard Knock Radio.
Keep it locked.
What's up? This is Quapelet, and you're listening to Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop.
Yo, check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one, news, views, and hip-hop.
I'm Eddie Zane.
And I'm Helen Zia.
And we are on Hard Knock Radio.
What's up, folks? This is your girl Femi representing the whole Bay Area. I'm here on Hard Knock Radio. News, views, and hip-hop. Stay tuned.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. There's been a lot of talk locally and nationally about the plight of unhoused individuals, the homeless. There have been laws put on the books that have now allowed municipalities to unceremoniously remove the homeless and put them where? That remains to be seen. This has all come to a height with what is going on in Washington, D.C., where the current administration said, we want to clean up the streets and said, we're going to get rid of those who are in encampments, those who are in tents, those who are without shelter. Now, the word was that they were going to put them in shelters, but that remains to be seen. we have seen people being removed forcefully. Closer to home, we've had those who are in house also catch the attention of folks who want to follow in a similar manner. And I wanted to get a state of the homeless, the houseless, with a couple of people that have their ears on the ground, their shoulder to the grind. We're talking about Nita B, who is co-founder of The Village, which is a grassroots organization led by unhoused activists. They provide food, shelter, and sanitation and dignity to the unhoused residents of Oakland. And we also have John Genesacco, who is an advocate for the unhoused in Oakland. So welcome to the show. And I want to start off with, you know, the recent Supreme Court ruling and then what is going on in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, thanks for having us on here, Dave. We also want to mention that John is one of the members and co-founders of the Wood Street Commons. He's been living on Wood Street for a long time and organizing there. What's happening on a national level is really trickling down here in Oakland. And like you said, like there was the pretext that we're going to go after the homeless, but again, with no due process. And, you know, about a month ago, Trump has signed an executive order that clumped together people experiencing homelessness and people experiencing mental health issues in one category, and a criminal category, and that stripped them of due process, stripped them of getting diagnosis, stripped them of even proving if they were homeless or not. And, you know, as you said, to not move people into shelter, but to move them into institutions, like criminal institutions, mental institutions. But where those locations are, we do not know. What we do know is that in D.C., the homeless have disappeared. And we're not sure where they went. And as you said, now that the homeless have disappeared, that has not made the National Guards leave. That has not made ICE and Homeland Security agents and other federal agencies leave. It has not given the D.C. police jurisdiction back to the city of D.C. It's still under Trump's jurisdiction. And we're seeing, you know, right now is the end of summer. This is the time that, you know, D.C. is usually the most vibrant, the most busy, bustling in the streets. The streets are empty from reports we're hearing on the street. People are terrified to leave. Black and brown men and boys specifically are being targeted and stopped for no reason at all and harassed. These federal agents and are going door to door, knocking on people's doors and harassing them. This is laying the ground for what could happen and probably will happen in other cities. And here, you know, we come to the state and, you know, everything is very ripe for this in the state of California. We have a governor who, you know, it's really funny watching this theater of the absurd happen between Trump and Newsom right now, because Newsom and his, ordinances and legislation that had been passed, you know, over the past, you know, year and a half, are absolutely in line with Trump. He had an ordinance last fall urging cities to get rid of the encampments and providing monetary incentives for the cities that did get rid of the encampments. Again, with no real solution to homeless, but with a desire to criminalize and make unhoused people invisible. And we know that homelessness is going to expand across the country because of the federal cuts in HUD, because of the federal cuts in any kind of housing for people living with HIV and AIDS, because of cuts to cash aid and GA and food stamps. People are going to be driven deeper into poverty. And so we know because of these federal cuts, homelessness is going to increase. And, you know, the price of rent is not going down. The cost of living in urban areas is not going down. It continues to get higher. Well, I read a recent report that the cost of living in Oakland, it was going, you know, it was starting to plateau for a little bit and even drop a little bit. But right now it is turning back up, and rental prices in Oakland are increasing. And so then we see, you know, this also locally, We have an encampment management policy, and it isn't the best policy, but there are parts in it that would be very strong and very helpful if the city actually followed them, specifically that you can't evict an encampment unless you offer them shelter. That does not happen. That does not happen. The city has a great PR machine that keeps on showing before and after pictures of here's what the street looked like before the encampment. Here's what the street like looked at when we got rid of the encampment and everyone was offered shelter. That is not a truth. Both me and John have been at evictions, dozens of evictions. I started going to evictions 11 years ago. That has never happened. The city's not supposed to throw away people's property. It states so in their policy. And myself and in one of the encampments I lived in actually filed a civil rights lawsuit against the city. And we were able to refine that policy around not throwing people's stuff away with the, you know, under the eyes of a Supreme Court judge. The city doesn't follow that court order from the judge. And what we know is that these sweeps are increasing the mortality of unhoused people. There are so many reports that we can cite from coast to coast about how mortality, drug overdoses because of sweeps increased by 20%, that that the sweeps have quadrupled the deaths just in general of unhoused people, drug-related or not. Because it destabilizes people, it robs people of their stability, it robs people of the provisions they need to just survive, shelter, clothing, medicine. We've seen here in Oakland people's medicine being thrown away. We've seen wheelchairs being thrown away. I saw a man's prosthetic leg being thrown away and he was left on the curb without his leg. It goes on and on and on. What you're going to hear, there's something coming up in Oakland through city council.
Before we get to that, I want to get some thoughts from John on some of this as well, and then we can talk about some of the policies. John, Nita B has said a lot, and you being a part of Wood Street, which was one of the larger encampments, what would you add to what she's said? What do you think is missing in terms of people's understanding what those who are in house are dealing with?
Hi, my name is John Janosko. I was unhoused on Wood Street for about 8 years. Luckily enough, I got housed about a year ago. I think a lot of people don't understand that, first of all, that people came to Wood Street because they were sit down to Wood Street. About 10 years ago, city government, Oakland city government started directing the police department to send people down to Wood Street. And so you have this mass, growth of an encampment down there. What they're not telling people is the narrative that started down there that they created. When it comes to like the trash, people don't know that the trash that you see in a lot of these encampments, you know, is illegal dumping, but it's also because the city of Oakland directed the encampments to put their trash at the corner that was supposed to be picked up in a public space, public viewing, so people could see that. It's a really negative narrative that was created against us. Also, I feel like people don't understand that there are only in Oakland 1,100 shelter beds, and there are 1,500 people, 5,500 people unhoused on any given night. There is not enough shelter beds to shelter all of these people that are out there. And they try to they use the word service resistant when going out to these encampments. They have, like Anita B said, have really ramped up on the evictions. They're not following the encampment policy, the encampment policies that they set up. They're supposed to give notice. They're supposed to save people's belongings and store them for 90 days. That doesn't happen. People have tried to get their belongings back, and they've been sent down these rabbit holes to dead ends. It's just continually to get worse and worse. It's the Trump administration and the things that the city of Oakland are doing are to criminalize the unhoused community, and I get put them in jails. They're not humane practices.
John, let me ask you this. Somebody's listening to this and they're saying, did he say he was unhoused for 8 years? And they're going to say to themselves, well, why didn't he get a job? Why didn't he improve his conditions? What was wrong with John that he was out on these streets for 8 years? That's what somebody's saying with their arms folded and looking at you skeptically, you know, when they're hearing this. Can you explain what is going on that, because you're not the only one who's been in house for years at a time. And I think it's important that we really understand the challenges that are faced. And I'm going to put this one thing out there just from my own experience. Try moving. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we wanted to move not too long ago, and we needed minimum 10 to 12,000 just to, you know, get everything, you know, deposit, first month's rent, all these different types of things, crazy credit, a crazy amount of income, like three times the amount that was, you know, the rent. It was crazy, you know. And so if you don't have 10,000 in your coffers that you can just, you know, apply to moving, you're going to be in a world of trouble. And you try to bounce and go to another city, it's not that much different. So you might go, well, get out of Oakland and go where? To Hayward? It ain't that much change. Go to San Leandro, you know, even out in Tracy and those places, those things are pretty costly. But that's just somebody who is housed, you know, and God forbid if you didn't have, you know, if you had to move the next day. But from somebody like yourself, what are some of the challenges that you have faced and you know, and peers of yours?
That question, I speak from the heart with stuff like this. Sometimes I feel like that question's unfair because the reasonings for me being unhoused are totally different from somebody else being unhoused. This one size fits all reason for why people are on the street, that's very unfair. My situation is totally different. It would scare people if I honestly said the reasons why I was unhoused. I became unhoused because of drugs and alcohol. That was my reason, and just not being responsible, and just sort of giving up on life at that time because of whatever was going on with me. It's so much. And I out there when I was unhoused, I found community. And for a period of time, I didn't want to be housed. I didn't want to be in a system that just chews you up and spits you out. And like you said, about how much it costs to be able to move, and you have a job. You're you know, in society, people look at you as somebody being stable. Look at me, basically at the bottom, on a curb, no income, no address, no ID, no social security card, none of the stuff necessary to be able to go out there and get a job, to be able to clean myself up every day. How would you expect someone, honestly, they say, pull yourself up or your bootstraps. How do you do that when they are coming once a week, sweeping you, throwing away all of your documents, throwing everything, your little bit of a cardboard box stability, your safety zone that you come back to, your safety net every night, they're throwing that away weekly. You're trying to continually catch up and get these documents and stuff. I stayed unhoused for as long as I did because also I found community out there. I started building community with the people that I was unhoused with. But everyone has a different story, but look where I'm at now though. People don't see that part of that. Even though this community to society looked so dysfunctional, everybody needs community. And now I'm able to give back to my community. I, with Wood Street Commons and other unhoused people, have started a nonprofit. We do the exact same thing that Village does. We're feeding people, we're clothing people, we're doing outreach, we're advocating, we're on these talk shows, like trying to educate people about how it is out there. But when we ask that question about what is it that you were unhoused for, or why did you stay unhoused for so long, there are so many different reasons. There are so different, but we have to remember, but everyone's reasons are a little bit different. Trauma, you're at the very bottom. And just like you said, look how hard it is for you if you want to move somewhere. So you're looking at somebody who's on GA to SSI income, and you're looking at them like, why can't you do it? Why can't you do it? I think people need to come out and experience what it's like to be unhoused, you know?
Appreciate that, John. Nita, let me, you want to add anything to what John has been saying?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, when Oakland was not too long ago, a working class city, a strong working class city, a refuge for low income and working class people, we had people who were living with trauma. We had people who were using drugs. We had people who were, you know, struggling, but we were all able to do it indoors because the cost of living and the cost of rent wasn't outrageous. As the cost of living and the cost of rent becomes higher and there are not enough tenant protections or people don't know their rights as tenants, what you see is people getting displaced. And contrary to popular fallacy, there's this idea that the majority of unhoused people here in Oakland are not from Oakland, and that's not true. The city records, the county data all shows that a majority of people in Oakland, first of all, are senior citizen African Americans who are from Oakland or cities surrounding Oakland, like Berkeley or San Leandro. And people have been pushed out. Everything that John has experienced, he experienced when he was housed as well. Myself, you know, we had to deal with an illegal eviction, and we won that eviction, and we even had a community circle. And my landlord did not like the fact that she was not going to be able to remove us the way she wanted to, and started having her son attack my daughter and my bonus daughter. Had people go online and start threatening my life. We've decided at that point it was safer for us to be on the streets than try to hold on to a substandard, overpriced, black mold infested, flooded quarter of a basement we were living in. And then to get out of that was so hard. For everything you just said, Davey, that applied to me, to be on the streets for 8.5 years, that I didn't make 3 times the amount of rent, that my credit score was terrible, that, you know, and these things did not exist, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago. 15 years ago, it was not a required standard to make 3 times the amount of rent. My first apartment here in Oakland was in 1992, was a 3-bedroom apartment on Telegraph and 24th Street, and it was $350 a month. I've had leases written on napkins. The homes here in Oakland, the properties in Oakland used to be owned by our friends and family. And so that's how we got into places, because you knew someone's mom. Your auntie had an extra room. Your auntie managed an apartment. These are all the ways that I got my apartments, you know, prior to gentrification, when the private developers bought up these once mom and pop owned places and started jacking up the rent. That changed everything for so many of us, you know. And so so my story, like John said, there's so, for as many people as there are on the streets, are the same reasons, are as many reasons there are why people are homeless. It's not there's not a simple answer to that question. I think the bottom line is that we have all been displaced and we've been priced out of Oakland. That is the bottom line.
When somebody goes, Nita, well, why don't you just go to another place? Go to a place where you can thrive. What do you respond? How do you respond to that? Why don't you go to Stockton or Modesto or, you know, someplace like that where you might be able to find be able to get a foothold?
Well, I have a few responses to that. One, because I choose not to, and I should have the choice to be where I want to be. And why I choose not to do that is because my community is here. I am rooted in Oakland. And even though I was unhoused, I never stopped working. I have 2 businesses that I run myself. I have a jewelry and clothing business, and I have a food business. And I kept on doing those regardless of me being unhoused. And that is my bread and butter. for me, I'm 56 years old. For me to go to another place to do this at this age, how? I don't have the energy of a 20-year-old. I've invested 30 years into growing my businesses, as a business owner should. If I uproot now and I'm too old to hire, they're not going to hire a 56, you know, age person. If I couldn't start my businesses again, how do I enter the workforce at this age? I am more stable here unhoused because of my businesses, because of my community, because of my social net, because of my connections, than if I were to go to a city that I don't know anyone. That's why
I think that's important. And maybe, John, you could speak on this as well. When you mentioned the word, the age, 56, I hope that doesn't go over people's heads, because, you know, when I've been down to encampments, I don't see a lot of young people like that. I don't see 20-year-olds. I see people that could be your grandparents. And that, what I think, was shocking. I think really the first time I really saw that was over at the High Street encampments. And I was just like I saw all these elders there. That brought me to tears. And then when you go out into the Deep East, you see a lot of elders over there. That's not the face of the homeless when we see this. Can you maybe give us a picture of who they are? Because I think there's another image that comes into people's minds versus seeing somebody who could be your grandma, you know, sleeping out on the street.
I think a lot of the people that you see out there, especially when you say the elder, because I'm 56 years old too, and these people you see out there are a lot of people who like lost their homes in the housing crash when they had those fluctuating interest rates, and everybody was scammed out of their, you know, their mortgage, and basically people got into a mortgage they couldn't afford. I mean, you know, could afford at that moment, but then a year or two later, all of a sudden it's like triple the amount, four times the amount that it was said. And a lot of people lost it then. Also, that, you know, just I feel like just because the world is changing now with, you know, AI and you know, with computers and stuff, and there's less, I would say, use for people when it comes to the labor force. So that's changing, and people are losing their jobs. It trickles down from each generation and stuff. The face of homelessness is not like the bag lady with the shopping cart anymore. It could be, you know, a family, or it could be someone in their 20s. It could be somebody in their 30s. It could be someone in their 40s. It's that saying, like, you're only a paycheck away from being on the streets. And that's how it is right now. I really want to just jump back with that one question about, why don't you just move to a different place? And just like Anita said, I was born and raised in Oakland. I grew up here. So why would I move somewhere else when my whole foundation is here? Everything that I know, my family, you know, my work, you know, the support network that we've all built up in this community so we can thrive. Why should I? Why don't everyone else move so the prices go down? I don't know. Okay. You know, that's crazy.
You know, I still want to come back to, and I don't want to downplay, and I don't want to obscure the amount of seniors that are in these encampments. Yes. I think that's critically important. I mean, I can see a 20-year-old in their car, and it may be a family, but damn, when I see, you know, people that could be your grandma, that's a whole other thing, because what brings the question is, where's the safety net for the elders? And what do you expect somebody, even if it's one or two, and it's much more than one or two, you know, it's a whole lot. It might be a couple of thousand at the very least. You know, what are we doing to make sure that the most vulnerable, in this case, it would be our seniors, what are we doing for them other than sweeping them up and tossing their stuff away and then telling them to pull themselves up? Because at 30 something, you were able to do it, but at 70 or 60 or whatever, they're completely upended. And to me, I think that is something that is not really fully addressed, whether it's under the guise of elder abuse, whether it's looking at the feasibility of safety nets, which have all been cut, and you got people saying, let's get rid of Social Security in the whole nine, or raise the retirement age. All these things are kind of, you know, they're said real quickly, and then we move on. And then we're not looking and saying, well, how does that look when somebody is impacted that way? And that's what I'm saying. When I, again, Nita, when I seen the Maldives, I was just like shocked. It's stunned. It was like you're living here? You know, right. How does that happen in our city? Right. Look, right. Just going to the gym today, right over here by the lake where you're at a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Right there in the library, you will see somebody who has to be close to 80. We'll go right. down here to what used to be the Starbucks, now Phil's. You'll see an elder black man who has to be 80. Why are they homeless? What is going on? Why are they out on the streets? Should be a question that, you know, that reverberates with all of us. I know it does with you all and a lot of people listening, but somebody sitting there making policy, they have to have a whole other, you know, approach. They just can't be one size fits all and sweep them up and toss them away.
Right. And I, you know, just to your point, an overwhelming majority of Oakland's unhoused are seniors. That is a fact that's been documented by the city and by the county. And I think, you know, we have leadership that is so aligned and married to the development model of gentrification that to give any consideration to low-income working class residents and their needs would completely divert from that agenda. If they were to actually build, so the city has a housing strategy that actually, or a homeless strategy called the PATH plan that is being revamped as we speak. But up until this moment, the city's PATH plan did not include permanent housing. The only solution to homelessness is permanent housing, period. There's no if, and, or buts. You can't have a cookie cutter model, because to get into that permanent housing, each different person, each different demographic is going to have a different pathway to get there. The elders will have a different pathway. The youth will have a different pathway. People formerly incarcerated will have a different pathway. People trying to flee domestic violence and hiding from their abusers will have a different pathway. The seniors will have a different pathway. The veterans who are dealing with their mental issues and their consequences of being active duty will have a different pathway, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that is not being consideration. And not only that, there's no housing in the plan at this moment. We're hoping that because we're in this time for the city to revamp their strategic plan, that we actually get the solution in the plan this time, housing, and that that the pathway to those or the pipelines to those different kinds of housing reflect the kinds of needs and struggles and removal of barriers people face.
How feasible is that? Considering, and I don't know if there's some sort of executive order that was signed or if they're getting ready to kind of enshrine this in some sort of other law, but Trump was saying, you know, look, we can get you public housing, but you got to be in and out in 2 years. So, yeah, you're 70. By the time you're 72, you need to be out of there, is what I'm thinking in my head. You're 60, and by the time you're 62, you need to be on out of there. None of this permanent housing stuff is what he was saying. So right. If we're talking about having housing permanently as a solution, and oftentimes with, you know, you had to do a dance with HUD, which means that you're involving the federal government, if their attitude is like everybody either got to work or they got to, you know, be out of here in 2 years, none of this, you know, permanency. How feasible is what you're talking about? How feasible is that to happen?
You know, that's a really good point that, you know, again, housing is getting cut. And I think here in Alameda County, we have an amazing opportunity to take a stand against Trump's authoritarianism. And because of the foresight of Alameda County voters, we have Measure W that has recently been passed. For folks who don't know, Measure W is a sales tax that the voters of Alameda County voted on in the ballot. and in 2020. And it's been sitting there accumulating funds because it went to a court because people were trying to challenge it.
The developers were trying to challenge it, right?
Yes, yes. And the recently the judge has you know, sided for the people, not the, you know, not the opponents of Measure W, and the funds have now recently been released, and it's going to be going towards it was campaigned for to use for solutions for homelessness and services for homeless, and so that's moving forward. The County Board of Supervisors did a historic vote. They have dedicated $1.4 billion to homeless services, and 80% of that goes to solutions and to the homelessness, permanent housing and interim shelter. And in a time where the state has, Newsom has said he's not giving any more encampment resolution funds or any kind of homeless funds to Oakland. Oakland has completely, you know, screwed that over because of their inability to manage and do right by that money. They're not getting any more state funds. Trump has slashed all of that. And as you say, he's become very authoritarian with his approach to homelessness. So this is happening across the country. It's happening across California. But here in Alameda, we're in a bubble. And the Board of Supervisors has framed the allocation of Measure W to go to best practices. And best practices means don't sweep people. Work with people where they're at. It's going towards permanent housing. It's going towards more interim shelter that leads into permanent housing. Right now, we have a hamster wheel where there is no clear pathway to get from the streets to permanent housing. And like I said, in here in Oakland, we don't even have that permanent housing in the pipeline. Me and John and others have formed a group called the Housing and Dignity Collaborative, where we have been working with Alameda County Board of Supervisor Nikki Fortunata Bass to basically develop this framework and this idea of a pipeline that goes from the encampments, and each encampment being attached to interim housing, each interim housing be attached to permanent housing, so people can actually see where they're going, and it's not a revolving door back into the streets. But what we need is to, you know, convince the rest of the county Board of Supervisors, and more specifically our city's elected and bureaucratic officials, because at the end of the day, we're going to need those lands that the city sits on to create this pipeline from that starts with, you know, they don't want, people don't want to see homelessness anymore. The tolerance, you know, maybe 11, 12 years ago, people had empathy and even tolerance for the unhoused of Oakland. That has fully shifted. There has been such a major blame the victim game happening in Oakland, where people are tired of seeing the illegal dumping and associated with the homeless. People are tired of seeing the massive
I was going to ask you about that. I'm glad you brought it up, Nita B. And John Sacco, who is our guest this afternoon. So the main thing that people say, and, you know, I could see it looking out my window, mattresses, couches, you know, all kind of junk sitting on the street. And somebody, man, these homeless people, we need to get rid of them, John. We need to get rid of them. But then, lo and behold, we start to see videos. People driving in from far off places, and sometimes even here in U-Hauls that they had to rent, filled with furniture, just dumping it anywhere and bouncing. Right. Sometimes they dump it in the hills. The other day, somebody dumped off a mattress. You know, that wasn't a homeless person in a shopping cart. That's a huge king size, you know, bed frame and mattress, just drove in a truck, dropped it off and bounced and kept it moving along with a whole bunch of other things. And so this association with illegal dumping has been attached to the homeless. And from where I'm sitting and what I've personally seen, these are two different things. These are two very, very different things. You know, I don't know who homeboy was, you know, with three other people in the car that drove their truck. you know, and just dump stuff off by the lake and then bounce, right? That wasn't somebody who I think was in an encampment. And I can only imagine that if I had some stuff to get rid of, I might want to go to the encampments and just drop them off over there. I don't know, you know, what the politics would be, but I think it's been an unfair situation to put those two together. And I'll say one other thing about the you know, getting rid of furniture. I don't know if anybody's gone down to some of these places to try and, you know, do this thing legally. You know, I have. You know, I had a dresser, had an old chair I wanted to get rid of, and I went down there to the Davis Street thing. They asked if I was a Alameda County resident and all that. And when I left, it cost me more to dump than it did for the damn thing that I bought. It was $146, you know, and they kind of weigh like, you know, not the weight of your car, but they were like, you know, what do you have in your back trunk? What do you have in your back seat? And it was like, you know, $76 plus $76. And it was like, wow, $140 to get rid of this. I'm not going to lie. It would have been easier for me just to drop it off somewhere. You know, maybe I should have went down to Wood Street and just put it there. But that's inexcusable. You're trying to get rid of stuff and it costs money. And you know, then they're like, well, they'll come pick it up. And then it's like, okay, well, let's pick it up. And then they give you like a 3x3, you know, compartment. It's like, so you only have 3 feet by 3 feet of stuff that you can have, and then we can get rid of it. You know, so anything more, you get a king size mattress, that ain't it. So you got to rent a truck, drive it down there and pay 76 off the top. And that's crazy. That's crazy when you don't have that much money. But let's talk about the illegal dumping and its association with homelessness.
Well, it's a narrative that, it, you know, was created, like, I feel like it has been building for like about 12 years. It just started off basically with encampments starting to sprout up, bigger encampments, and no way to get rid of their waste. And the city, like they did with us down on Wood Street, saying, here's this corner, this is where you dump all your trash, and then we'll come pick it up, you know, supposedly once a week, which they never did. And that started growing. And so I noticed that more people that were, you know, going to the dump or were supposed to be going to the dump started noticing that there was trash in these different locations throughout our city, where the city of Oakland was telling us, the unhoused community, to put our trash that they would pick up. And people just started coming to those places and continue the dump. So over the years, people in these neighborhoods drive by, they see unhoused people, you know, they see the pile of trash. Sometimes they see people in that trash. And so they associated the trash with the unhoused people and started getting this, you know, this aggression towards us and affiliation with trash and unhoused people. Like you just said, you look at the trash and stuff. Unhoused people don't have refrigerators. We don't have couches. We don't have all of this stuff from construction sites that is being dumped, you know, drywall, you know, dishwashers, all of this stuff. We're not bringing those back in shopping carts. We're not bringing them back on our bikes and stuff. Doesn't make any sense. Where do you think this stuff is coming from? In the city of Oakland, I feel like this, they use it to divide us, divide the housed and the unhoused. They use it to create this bad narrative with us. So it would be another excuse, another reason for them to want to come in, and which they use to shut down the encampments for, you know, health reason, rats, you know, feces, you know, the whole nine yards. And that's been an excuse that they've used to come in without notice to clear encampments.
Now, John, there's an apartment building not far from where I'm at, and every couple of months they will have a huge giant container come through, and it sits there, and I guess it's for the residents of the building, but boy, everybody has a field day. Me too. Yep, me too. We have all ran down there in the middle of the night and dumped our stuff into that container because I don't have $146 for the dump, right? So everybody does, and I think the people in the building, they know it. And, you know, and then after about a week, they come along, you know, they pick up all this stuff. And it's been like, you know, like literally like an entire block and a half have used that. why couldn't the city just do that with those encampments? Why couldn't they just put the stuff there? You know, you got your trash, we'll come here, we'll take it up, and then, you know, so we don't have to worry about the blight, and then we can sit here and deal with trying to get permanent housing. It just seems like a very simple thing, because they do it with a lot of these apartments. Why couldn't they do it with you guys?
It's crazy that you say that too, because when we were on Wood Street, we actually, when we were at the 1707 Wood Street across the street from Raimondé Park, we were call ourselves trying to work with the city, and we offered to pay the $500 a month for one of those big garbage dumpsters so we can get rid of our trash. They didn't want to provide those type of services or provide one of those big garbage cans, because they thought that would bring more people to the encampments. So if you provide trash removal services, the excuse is that will bring more people to encampment. That was sort of like justify an encampment being there, was sort of make it more legit, you know, legitimacy on an encampment being where they're at. And they didn't want that. Then they also say people would come and unhoused people would dig through it and throw trash everywhere and stuff. But they basically didn't want to supply that, because they thought that would actually grow an encampment, having a trash removal service there. So we offered to pay at one point, and they told us no.
Wow.
And, you know, we had advocated for that for the all 8 years Libby was in office. We advocated for that for the year and a half, 2 years that Shane Tao was in office. And both of those administration, both of those mayors told us that absolutely no to dumpsters, because that would attract more illegal dumping. And the interesting thing is that on East 12th, we're like, the illegal dumping's already happened, deal with it. But on East 12th, we know for a fact that on the median, 14th Avenue to 18th Avenue, that people were showing up to that encampment to dump things up, to dump things there, because members of Department of Public Works told them to go there. They were directed by the city to go to the homeless encampments and dump things there. And so again, it's this narrative, this has been created. This has been manufactured. So much of what we see has been manufactured to cause this division and basically erode the tolerance and the compassion people have for unhoused residents here. It's a shame.
Nita, as we're getting ready to wrap up, Ken Houston, who represents District 7, I believe, he is, you know, he's long been a proponent, you know, somebody who hates the illegal dumping. He's campaigned on that. He says that he has a solution for the houseless. You know, he's been getting some press on that. Where do you stand with Ken Houston and his solution? Is it a solution, or is it an attack on the homeless?
You know, just about Ken, 11, 12 years ago, Ken would have been on this side of the table, you know, supporting unhoused people, trying to make sure that they were got their basic needs met, and he has flip-flopped on that. And I feel like, unfortunately, that's something we see our elected officials do a lot. And yes, he has a encampment abatement policy that actually would align the city's current practices with their policy, because the city's practices is in total currently violation of the current encampment management policy. The language has not been released, but we do know a few details. One, that they would tow vehicles without notice and without offers to shelter, and they would demolish any encampments on sidewalks without notice or offers to shelter. It would do what's already been happening, which is continue to make the unhoused in Oakland invisible.
That's what the Trump administration is doing in D.C.
Yeah, it's totally aligned with Trump. That's the scary part, is that what we're getting from City Hall is that the city council members are planning to pass this. And there was some shady business that happened. I'm going to get to in a second how this all kind of came about. But I'm sure people have noticed that the encampments in Oakland have disappeared. It doesn't mean that homelessness has gone away. It actually means that people are wandering. What you do see in Oakland right now is more people pushing shopping carts, more people sleeping on benches, more people walking around with bags. We haven't seen that kind of homelessness in decades, but we return to that and the instability that comes with that. And absolutely, the council has decided to pass this according to what we're hearing from City Hall, because it listens to the anti-homeless voices who are louder right now than the people who are standing on civil rights and human rights. And there was some shady business that was getting, they were trying to fast track this. So it was originally put, and if I was listening to some of the language that Ken was using, and I pulled up, samples of anti-camping laws, anti-homeless laws in the rest of the country, and compared them to Jim Crow laws, and then compared it to the language that Ken was using. And it's very much in line. The anti-camping laws, the Jim Crow anti-vagrancy laws from the Jim Crow era, the Black Codes, and what Ken is pushing and the language that he's using are fully aligned. So this isn't just aligned with Trump. This is aligned with Jim Crow. And what we know is that this is causing harm. It's really about population control and building up the prison industry. That is a legacy of Jim Crow. And there's very little research or evidence that says this is going to be an effective way to spend money. We are currently in a budget crisis, so this is very irresponsible. Currently, the city spends more than $1,500 an hour on sweeps. That's, we should be doing less sweeps. But as people have seen, is that another argument he's using that Trump is also using, again in line, is that homelessness is a source of crime in cities. And here in Oakland, we see that our crime has decreased, and that city reports actually out of City Hall has shown that violent crimes in encampments are very low, and that the overall crime rates in Oakland have completely declined. And we have this opportunity right now to take a stand against the Trump's fascism and Trump's attack on people of color, Black folks, and poor people. And you would think in a city like Oakland, where so many elected officials like to stand on the legacy of the Black Panthers, we have to ask ourselves, well, if you're standing on the legacy of the Black Panthers, what would the Black Panthers have done? Point number four in the 10-point program is affordable housing for all. That's what the Panthers would have done. They would not have said expensive sweeps for all. We have an opportunity to take a stand. And right now, we're doing a call to action. And I'm going to let John talk about that right now, about this call to action that we're trying to do to stand up against Ken and sway the city council so that they're not just hearing the anti-homeless voices, but they're actually hearing the voices of people who believe in human rights and who believe in solutions.
John, we have less than a minute. What do you want people to know, or how can they be involved?
We have a petition going around to that people can sign. You can find a petition on the Wood Street website, www.woodstreetcommons.org. It's going to be posted. It'll be also on the Wood Street Instagram account. You can also click the link in our bio on the Instagram account, and it will take you to the link tree that there will be other spaces where this petition that you can sign on to going against this ordinance that he's trying to create get passed through City Council. Anita, any other spaces that it's going to be at?
Yeah, we also have a call. Please call and email your council member. All of that information, their phone numbers and their emails will also be on the Village Village in Oakland website, and the Village in Oakland Facebook, and the Oakland Village Instagram. Okay. If you want to volunteer to help spread the word, you can contact Wood Street Commons, the Village in Oakland. We will plug you in. We are hitting the boots on the ground to really campaign and get the truth out there and education out there about what is happening. Anything that is in line with Trump is not the solution. The city of Oakland should be running fast forward the opposite direction of what the Trump administration is doing, not running fast forward to be in line with fascism. And September 10th is a special meeting. September 10th is a special meeting where they're going to be voting on this. Again, this was all fast track. They wanted to vote on this while they were in recess. They wanted to take this to council without going through committee. they were trying to do illegal things, the city council, but they were stopped. They had to be reminded that what they were trying to do was illegal. So September 10th, public safety committee meeting is where it's going to be voted on. We're trying to end it in that committee so it never gets to city council, September 10th.
Nita B and John, we appreciate you. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
40 degrees, the rain falls hard. An old man sleeps, no roof, no guard. Under the freeway, lost in cold. Somebody's father left out alone. What mother could picture this sight? Her child forgotten, lost to the night. $1 billion homes lying the way, but for him there's no shelter, no place to stay. What happens to us when we fall from grace?
Fall from grace.
When the world turns its back and we lose our place. Why do the evil people never ever die? While the good ones suffer and ask the sky, is there no justice for the ones who cry? Will we ever rise? Will we ever thrive? As this old man shivers in the dead of night, rich people passing their lives full of life, they turn a blind eye, too busy to care, while he's left to freeze in the cold, cold air.